Welcome to The Fractional Life. I'm your host, John Arms, along with our co-host, Jason Voyevich. We're obsessed with the market shift away from the full-time employment workforce to what most are calling a fractional world or gig life, particularly as it relates to marketing and communications. If you're in marketing and communications, we hope you find new ideas, inspiration, and motivation to join the fractional workforce here. The Fractional Life is a production of Unified Funnel Metrics, your ticket to joining the fractional world. Welcome, and we're glad you're here. So welcome back, everybody. Today we're talking to Alex Holtgren. Did I pronounce that right?
You did.
I've known you for months, but I want to make sure I get the pronunciation right.
It was perfect. Yeah.
Alex is a fractional chief marketing officer out of Minneapolis and surrounding communities. First of all, congrats are in order. You finished your UFM training.
I did.
Was this just last night?
Yeah, literally last night was the last of the videos. Got through it all.
I think you have broken the record in record time of all the users, so good
Thank
for you.
Appreciate that.
I don't know if you took a little extra coffee or anything, but congratulations on the order. So
I appreciate that.
That's awesome.
I mean, it's great content. Just really helps get your thoughts together about what it means to be fractional. And I mean, there's a lot of ways you can do it, but having this framework makes all the difference.
It does, and an operating system. It's funny, you know, we hear the word gig, fractional gig, fractional, fractional gig, which is the term. We'll let the market sort of sort that out.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. So, well, today we're going to talk about fits and starts, marketing fits and starts. Alex is a seasoned marketer, having been at a lot of big brands and things like that. And I thought, well, I'm going to pull your life experiences in this industry out and the fits and starts, why they exist, what to do about it, you know, specifically, obviously the disease of fits and starts and the damage it can cause in marketing and sales. And then specifically then, you know, how does it apply to the fractional market? So, but first let me just start with a simple, a question here for you, Alex. Tell me about what you've seen in marketing fits and starts.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's probably more the rule than the exception. Just based on the way campaigns are often run and the way a lot of times people decide to go to market with whatever they're doing. You know, classic example, I worked at Ford for a lot of years, about 14 years. And if you think about the launch of a new vehicle, when Jim Farley came in as our CMO, he really highlighted this because there would be some sort of a debut at an auto show. But then realistically, that was just a lot of fanfare. And then you wouldn't talk about it for another 18 months. So there was all this really exciting goodwill towards this new product. And then we didn't say anything. And
just
then
quiet.
Just completely quiet.
Crickets?
Yeah, because it wasn't ready for sale yet. So like it would be this big promotional thing, but then all of a sudden you've got to get back to the day-to-day business. But then when the thing was finally ready to launch, which would have been 18 to 24 months later, you got to spend all that money to get the awareness back up again on this new product because now it's ready to go to market.
Yeah.
And there would be a burst of, you know, anywhere from 6 to 18 weeks, depending on the vehicle and the campaign, where you'd spend a lot of time talking about that vehicle, all the attributes, all the wonderful things about it, and then the campaign would end and it would all disappear again. It would be quiet, and the only time you would ever hear about that individual nameplate again was during some sort of a big sale, and it was because it was $2,000 off or whatever the rebate was at that time. So there has been this cyclical problem that I think faces a lot of business, but even a company the size of Ford, which has, you know, a fairly significant amount of money they spend on marketing and budgets, but just the nature of how they launch products, that was always an issue. It's like, you know, if you are the brand manager of a product, unless some major milestone happened, there wasn't a lot of money to talk about that specific product line.
So after so many years in this business,
right,
and getting the gray hairs and the scars to prove it, that disease of fits and starts, you see it as prevalent today as ever?
I do, and it really depends on the nature of the business. I mean, a lot of times people are trying to create buzz and excitement, and oftentimes it's a new product launch or something, but because of that, budgets will fluctuate pretty significantly. Even though there's a constant product offering or service offering you could be talking about all along. And if we reoriented the strategy around that, I think that makes a lot more sense. You can be more consistent. You can save money because then you've got an ongoing strategy and process. You'll always have peaks and valleys in some of that, but the consistency is something that I just don't see across a lot of industries.
So let's talk about the root cause. You know, and through your lens, if you were to trail, why are we making such a erratic decision? What is the trigger for that? What have you seen?
Yeah, I think a lot of it, again, sometimes you do understand when you've got a new product launch, you've got to create awareness for something that you do need to spend probably a little more of a blip because you want to focus on something very, you know, very tactical for a very short period of time. But then sustaining that as things move on and reminding people that that's there, because the product or service is just as appealing as it always was, right? But we don't always think that way. And I think we're really missing opportunities by not being consistent in how we message and what we talk about.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so that's at the big level. A big auto manufacturer, they go through that. So sometimes those are the bellwether for how smaller businesses run. Have you seen it in small business as well?
I have. Well, if you get really small, there's no money to spend on marketing at all. So
the sales guys don't like that. They need some support.
Yeah, that's a whole different conversation. But I would say so. I mean, oftentimes, what tends to happen is even with a smaller business, then the focus becomes a sales event, which is a twofold issue. One is you're talking about your product, but you're talking about your product at a discount, which takes away from the overall brand value. So, but I think there's a lot of businesses that could probably just do a better job of a more consistent, talk about what your product is. So, I mean, if I'm going to dissect that, a lot of it comes down to, do you really understand what your core business is and what you have to offer, your unique selling proposition that will always be a good story to tell. Mm-hmm. And if you don't do the work to really understand that piece of it, I think it's easy to fall for some of the fits and starts, smoke and mirrors, or some vendor shows up with some new shiny object.
Yeah.
You decide, well, let's try that. No one's done it before. We've never tried it before. And if it's not part of an overall strategy for communication, the results, if you can get any results even, that you could really attribute to whatever that tactic was, can be pretty hard to understand.
Yeah. The habit is, I've seen it as well. Mm-hmm. I've seen it as well. And I'm always, particularly in small business, it always gets me a little upset in that a large company, it's not like they should waste money like that. But in a small business, it can put them out of business.
Absolutely.
So if you fall into, and they are pressured as much as anybody else to buy a thing, a shiny object, as you and I talked about last week. You know, there's at an event, there's 7,000 tools in marketing that can be bought today.
Right.
For marketers at an agency, at a big company, at a small company. And those aren't cheap, and you could put a lot of money into that and a lot of hope. The trouble I have with it is there's all this, we need to get activity going on our end.
Right.
We need to get out and get activity going, so we're going to spend a lot of money. It's going to be episodic, and I'm very, very excited. I see that the decision-driving factor for that is often at the leadership level, or maybe the board level, saying, we really need to do this. But their patience doesn't match to what you just said, which would be a consistent strategy of staying in front of people. Like,
right.
We're going to bomb the world, we're going to carpet bomb everything, and then we're going to hope for the best in a two-month window. You know, the metrics you and I run on UFM is based on a customer journey.
Right, absolutely.
And, unless you're talking consumables, you know, Kleenex and pens and things like that, those are short life cycles. But in B2B, those generally tend to be longer life cycles.
Right.
Well, so absolutely. It's really detrimental to the business.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. And even automotive, I mean, on average, it's about a 9-month purchase cycle from the original, I think I might want a new car, to actually going and buying one.
Mm-hmm.
But opposed to, like, I worked with Walmart too, and that's much more about, you know, how can I get the consumer to do one more trip this week or put one more item in their basket this week, right?
Sure.
It's much more short-term and tactical.
Yeah.
So that's got a whole different pace, obviously. But you're right. I mean, automotive, obviously, that's one of the most kind of considered purchases in most people's lives, second to their home. So that is a long process. But understanding that, again, that's the challenge. If you've got a campaign that only runs for a very finite period of time, you might hit it right, but you may hit people in the beginning, you might hit people in the end, and it may be too late. You're not on the short list, right?
Do you think that the habit is such, it's so prevalent that people do it in the absence of knowing that there's a better alternative? That this is the way marketing and sales and advertising has been done for so long, I've consumed it that way, and I've practiced it that way, that it's just a habit? That drives a lot of this episodic decision making?
I think a lot of it is kind of tradition, and a lot of businesses run on, this is the way we've always done it, right? And a lot of, that's gotten them where they are. So for a lot of people, that seems to keep working. And I think it's just being aware that the things are changing around them, and maybe there is a different way to do it or a newer way to do it. But it also depends on who's making the decisions. You know, I've also seen teams of in companies of various sizes where the team all knows the right thing to do, but they fall prey to the hippo, right? The highest paid person's opinion, who knows the way they did it forever. They're the ones that actually have the budgetary power. So you go with the old way of doing things, even though, all the voices internally and externally are saying, you might want to consider something different.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you say that. I had a meeting yesterday with somebody you connected me to, Sarah Darling.
Yeah.
And she talked about having the hard conversations, and that's her skill set, mm-hmm. is being able to do that. And I often would refer to it as, there comes a point when you have to flip over a table or pound your fists.
Yeah.
You know, you've done your analytics, you've done the numbers, you know the customer journey might be 18 months mm-hmm. or 9 months, and yet the company is used to doing things in more of an impatient way.
Yep.
And I used to think, well, I can only do the best of my recommendation. But as fractional CMOs, we now have a fiduciary responsibility.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
So we have to watch out for those dollars. So we literally have to get to a point where we're acting like and behaving like, this is my company. Mm-hmm. I have stake in it. And we're at a threat if we make these kind of decisions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that is going to be a little bit of the new, as more people move into the fractional world.
Yeah.
That's one of the challenges we're going to have to face, is you either get really good at having the hard conversations or get somebody like Sayer to do it.
Right.
It's almost protecting people from their own devices.
Right, right. You know, I think that's the advantage of being an outside perspective, because when someone hires a fractional CMO, or a fractional really anyone, mm-hmm. even just a consultant, they understand they're looking for that third-party point of view, right?
True.
You know, the advantage of being, like, for example, being a UFM fractional CMO is you do have a little more skin in the game, too, because it's not like you're just handing them a report and leaving. They actually, you know, if they agree with you, they're going to want you to implement it. So,
right.
You know, at some level anyway, or implement it with their team.
You're there every month.
Every
week you're there with an update. Every month you're there with the metrics. Here's what the hard numbers are saying. You've got a read on the customer purchase cycle.
Totally.
So you've got a lot more to work with to make those kind of decisions.
Yeah.
I think we'll end up saving people a lot of money.
Oh, absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely.
And in fact, we already have.
Yeah.
But the industry.
And Jason's got that great example of, you know, if you may want to go to a trade show because you've been going for the last 5 or 6 years. But when you actually sit down and look at how much money it's costing you and, you know, what, if you take all the costs into account, mm-hmm. right, and what you really expect to get out of it, is there a better investment with that money, right? Depending on what your overall objectives are.
Right. Cold, hard look at the numbers.
Yeah.
So because you've had you've had a good career, and being in automotive, you get very close with sales.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
What is the reaction of sales teams been to, A, marketing in general that mm-hmm. you've seen, or episodic marketing, or fits and starts marketing? What have you heard from them?
Well, you know, the auto dealership model is, it's kind of its own thing. Like a really well-run dealership actually will cover a lot of their costs in the service garage.
Sure, makes sense.
And then they cover, you know, if they can cover the bulk of the rest of it in used cars, because the margins on used cars are actually better than new cars.
Yeah.
Because there's too much variability with used cars, so it's a little murkier.
Yeah.
A really good dealer doesn't need to sell a lot of new cars to make money for the dealership itself.
There's a lot of other revenue streams.
Right, right. And it's also interesting because I worked in Europe for a while too, and that's a much different dealership model, because there, people will still come in and customize and order a car that shows up in 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the US, it's much more about that sales consultant's going to try to sell you something on the lot today, right?
Yeah.
Because they've got a monthly quota to hit, and they've got a bunch of inventory that, you know, after 60 days, they're going to have to pay interest on it, and they want to get rid of it. So, so to answer your question in terms of marketing support, I mean, I think that they appreciate anything that will drive traffic to the store. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit different, because even if you come in on, you know, if it's Ford, for example, you come in on an Explorer, well, if they got a bunch of Escapes, that sales consultant's gonna talk you to whatever they have on the floor, right? That's what they're gonna try to move.
Right.
So from that perspective, anything that drives people to the store, they appreciate. It's interesting though too, because, you know, the more information now available to consumers, because of whether it's advertising or just the information on even like Ford's own website, consumers become so much better equipped in the knowledge of that vehicle and what they're looking for when they show up.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a double-edged sword. In some ways, it makes it easier for the sales consultant, because the consumer knows exactly what they're looking for. But in some ways, it's hard, because if they definitely want the green one with these 30 options, well, we don't have it, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I understand the red one?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
So, but from a marketing standpoint, I mean, I think they understand their role in the process. But, you know, again, that was one of those things too, where from an automotive manufacturer standpoint, our job was just to get people to the door, right?
Yeah.
Once they crossed the threshold of the dealership, we didn't have anything to do with that.
So I would suspect that the sales team then is like, well, you can't just get them all to the door at the first part of the month or the first part of the year. I'm on the sales floor every single day.
Right.
So exactly. I can't live and pay my bills
right.
if you're only pushing a lot of attention in a small window and then leaving it alone for a while.
Right, exactly. What they would get excited about were more the rebates and incentives, because then again, those were messages that would drive traffic.
They had something about to work with.
Right, exactly, yeah, exactly. So, now, from a marketing standpoint, you know, you never want to be discounting your product, right? When you're sitting up in your brand ivory tower, you don't want to have any rebates on your vehicles. Mm-hmm. But the other thing you realize when you get out into the field is, you know, another $500 on the hood of a particular car can really change whether or not a consumer can make the monthly payment and get into it. Mm-hmm. So it's like, is it really destroying your brand, that $500 at the end of the day? Mm-hmm. Well, no, not really.
Yeah. No. Right. You know, the customer is kind of the arbiter of what the worth of the brand is.
Yeah, exactly. Ain't that the truth?
Yeah, absolutely. It really is. So as we switch gears a little bit here, mm-hmm. but what are you seeing, you know, now that you're in the fractional world and mm-hmm. have been, mm-hmm. We'll kind of come off of episodic marketing for a minute, but maybe we'll come back to it. You're part of 30% of the American workforce is now gig.
Yep.
It's been growing at about 5% a year. What do you see, like if you look down the road, what do you see is going to happen to the marketing complex? What's going to be so different as this sort of grows mm-hmm. and past habits and models erode?
Right.
Adweek had that big article about the agencies are all at the edge of the cliff now.
Right.
That
right.
model is exiting.
Yeah.
What do you see coming in?
I think we're really on the forefront of what the future is going to be, because there are a lot of companies, particularly smaller and medium-sized companies, that could really benefit from that strategic knowledge and experience of a more seasoned marketing executive. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, they can't afford a full-time, you know, they can't afford an FTE of an executive.
It just doesn't fit in the budget.
It doesn't. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, too, they don't need to, because what I think you're going to find more businesses realizing is, for 5, 10, 20 hours a week of that kind of experience, they're going to get everything they need.
Yeah.
And that's where I think the fractional model will continue to make sense, particularly, I mean, larger companies are always going to need to have, you know, they'll have FTEs, they're going to need a senior suite. Right, exactly. They're running a large organization. And obviously, you know, having been parts of those, I totally get it. But particularly for those smaller to mid-sized businesses, it's such a great opportunity for them to have access to somebody with, you know, 20, 25, 30 years of marketing experience mm-hmm. without having to foot the bill of a true senior level executive in a full-time role.
So that saves them. So you're trading $240,000 or some such number, $150,000 in that range, and you're taking it down to $60,000 per
yep,
fractional.
Exactly.
At a normal market price that, yep. that we're experiencing in the UFM model. Allowing them to reallocate dollars mm-hmm. or basically just save. But there's another hurdle to overcome there. One, to know that exists.
Right.
That I can go hire Alex.
Right.
And he can do what he can do really well. And that makes sense from a business, not just economically, but mostly from a performance standpoint.
Right, absolutely.
You don't need to grind out 80 hours in a week to be good.
No.
Not at this stage in your career.
No, not at all.
You've learned efficiency, and you know what to watch out for and all of that. However, customers don't necessarily know that.
Yeah, I think one of the challenges of being on the forefront of anything is you're not just selling yourself and your services, you're selling the idea and the concept, mm-hmm. right? So you get people to understand the model of what you're doing. So, mm-hmm. So I mean, that you know, that's part of the excitement and the challenge at the same time, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's only going to become easier for more fractional CMOs as it becomes more accepted and more just seen out there in the marketing world.
Yeah. Well, what I'm seeing, this is now a year as a fractional CMO myself, and having developed UFM, is two things. One is, what a relief, because we just didn't have the budget.
Right.
And overall, I sort of accept there's a reshaping of marketing.
Yep.
And fractional CMOs have a role. Mm-hmm. The talent inside of agencies has a role. Mm-hmm. But how that is delivered, the previous role is sort of exiting out. And that new role is still sort of being shaped.
Yeah.
So I get up in the morning because my role is not only be a fractional CMO to my customers, but also to build an enterprise, an ability, and a community for other fractional CMOs, for 1,000 more Alexes and 2,000 and 10,000 to go out and be a solopreneur.
Right.
And that's very, very gratifying. What I'm finding is that there's a lot of anxiety over taking that move. And because I get it, it's like it's been very stable for very, very long.
Sure.
But at the same time, I think, well, all of that skill does need to get someplace somewhere and where it can deliver. Do you think there's other models, whether it's tech or other things, where that talent is going to reshape itself, our model being what it is, and apply itself to the market in a different way?
Well, I think it definitely will happen. I think it's already happening. In fact, I think some of the first fractional executives I heard of were fractional CFOs.
Ah.
So people that could come in for, you know, if it was something where maybe there's a merger and acquisition happening, but it's also tax season, or someone went out on maternity, and I just need 5 or 10 extra hours of someone at a senior caliber who can do this stuff for us. So yeah, I think that, I mean, particularly, you know, there's a lot of people in, you know, call it Gen X, that are probably between 45 and 60 that have a lot of senior experience, right? We've got 20, 25, 30 years experience who, you know, for whatever reason are looking for something new to do. I mean, either they chose to do it or they got laid off or what have you. And there's all that knowledge there. And for companies of any size not to tap into that is a real missed opportunity, you know?
Gary Vaynerchuk wrote a post about it. He thought, he wrote that the most underutilized resource in American economy today is all of those people who have all that wisdom.
Yeah.
And the get rid of the idea that if people are old, their value is low.
Right.
Their value is actually the highest it's ever been.
Right, absolutely.
It just needs to be delivered in a way that you can afford it.
Yep.
And they can deploy it. So I want to ask you about that. So now you're putting yourself in front of clients and serving them in a fractional way. From a career standpoint, that's fantastic. How is this shaping the next 4 or 5 years of you individually? More time with family, you know,
Sort
of, what are you finding there?
No, absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, if I think back to different corporate jobs I've had and how many hours a day I was spending in meetings or answering email, right? I mean, I even said to my son at one point, you know, it was career day. It's like, you know, you want your dad to come in and tell him what he does. It's like, you don't want to know what I do. It's like, I spend 8.5 hours in meetings and I spend another 4 hours on email and I work for about 15 minutes a day, right?
You know, I heard this very thing yesterday.
Really?
You know, I did. And someone said, you don't really work at work. You do your work at home. At work, you fiddle around.
Yeah. Unless you want to get in 2 hours early before anyone else gets there. But even then, sometimes you're getting a jump on email right before the day starts.
Boy, is that ever a messed up
scenario. So yeah, I mean, the ability to come in and just add value and spend time with clients adding value. And then when your time together is done, you know, you don't, it's not that those other, you know, good things can happen in a well-run meeting, but a lot of particularly larger organizations, a lot of time is wasted with some really smart people who could be doing a lot more productive stuff.
Yeah, yeah, I think the fix-it industry is very attentive to that. You know, the fix-it industry, and by that I mean, you know, Traction and Gino Wickman.
Absolutely.
And coaches, and there's a lot of energy and a lot of time and a lot of dollars spent on coming in and helping repair what's broken inside of a company. I contend that a lot of those breaks are always going to be there.
Sure.
When you put 20, 50, 150 people in a room, a dynamic and a culture takes place. It's never going to be stable. It's always going to change.
Sure.
And you're always going to have to be attentive to that. Whether or not that's good or bad, I'm not a scientist on that to judge. I know it needs fixing constantly.
Right.
However, I find it interesting that, you know, we didn't create the gig workforce. We're calling it that now. It's been a marketplace that's been around for a while, but it's always been this sort of quiet little thing that some other people did.
Right.
It wasn't the norm.
Right.
We're at a tipping point. We're at 30% of the economy now.
Yeah.
So we're, you know, 20, if this keeps going at 5% per year, you can see where this is headed.
Yeah, absolutely.
What used to be the norm is out.
Right.
And what is the new norm? There was a story written recently where the future company is going to be a CTO and a CEO, and everybody else is either AI,
right,
or machinery,
right,
or fractional people like you and I.
Right.
It does envision an interesting future.
Right. Absolutely. So. Well, and I think the other thing that's kind of interesting, it's funny you mentioned that too, because there are some jobs that are primed to be replaced with robotics or AI of some kind, right? But the advantage you have, again, with more of a fractional CMO who brings a lot of different experience, probably from different industries, is different sets of problem-solving skills and ways of approaching things that someone, even just having been in the same industry for too long, may not think about, right?
Sure.
Because that's just it goes back to the earlier conversation. That's the way we've always done it, right?
It creates blind spots.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
inherent blind spots. And the more time you pass by a building when you drive to work, the less you realize that building is there.
Right.
Same thing happens professionally.
Exactly. Exactly.
The more time you do things repetition-wise, the less you see other opportunities.
Absolutely. You know, I used to go to like a lot of different conferences. And like when I go to automotive-specific ones, I never got as much value because it was all your competitors in the room with you. So people were very hesitant to really share what they were doing because... Sure. You know, why would I tell Toyota what we're doing, right? That wouldn't make any sense.
Yeah.
When I went to different conferences, that would be like, I'd be the only automotive rep there. So I'd be sitting next to someone from, you know, Amex and then next to Apple and next to Google. You could be a lot more free in sharing what you were doing because, you know, they knew how to take ideas and transfer them to their business. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if they took our idea, and if, you know, I don't care if Apple takes our idea or Amex sure. or whoever, right? It was because...
There's no threat to your business.
Exactly.
There.
That's not going to cause us to sell one less car.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, so those were always, it's that idea of bringing, you know, the best of different things together. And that's what you get in a more seasoned executive. Again, that's if you can't, you don't have to pay for an FTE to get that wisdom.
Exactly. Jason and I were talking this morning about what happens when you close a door that you're used to opening. Mm-hmm. And you talked to her earlier about, you know, you'd go spend 8 hours a day in a meeting mm-hmm. and then it was emails. And then about 15 minutes of your time, you really felt like you were doing your best set of
yeah.
stuff. And what we've realized is, you know, by just not doing those things, by just not being in the orbit of the email frenzy and the meeting frenzy, that time has to fill up with other things.
Mm-hmm.
You're still going to have a 24-hour day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're still going to have whatever it is. And that time fills up with things that, since you're free, you can pursue.
Absolutely.
Whether if you want to write a book,
right.
you want to go do some networking, you want to exercise, you want to spend some time with the family. That time opens up just in the absence of those distractions before.
Completely.
Doesn't it amaze you that has become so normal? Because what you just said, listeners listening to this, you know, please comment, email, you know, send notes at Unified Funnel Metrics is, what are you experiencing? You know, the idea that you'd spend 8 or 12 hours in a meeting, you know, the clock
right.
must be, it seems so irrational.
No, absolutely.
But yet so common.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's the norm, right? And nobody questions it because the company's been doing it that way for so long. And if you get introduced as a new employee into that, you know, you're told that's how it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
So to your point, it becomes the new normal. But it's the old normal, right? That's got to change.
Yeah.
Because I think people also realize they're not being the best version of themselves. I mean, no one seems to like it, but
good
it doesn't
point.
Seem to change, right?
Yeah. 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 Well, here you are on the other side of it.
Right.
You
right.
know,
right.
You've saved yourself. I've saved myself.
Indeed.
Those of us doing this said no more of that.
Right. Right.
You know, there was a statistic that those who leave marketing specifically,
mm-hmm.
Only 1 in 10 go only 1 in 10 go back once they've had enough.
Yeah.
Like I can't take this anymore.
Right.
Only 1 in 10 go back to it.
Right.
And I get that because if the back to it is not what you and I do, if
right.
it's not a fractional thing, if it's back to 8 hours of meetings and 60 emails of irrelevance,
right?
Why would you go back to that?
Right.
And
no,
you're probably
that's
getting
true.
Paid less anyway.
That's true. That's
you
true.
Know?
Now, I mean, having said that too, I mean, because you know, that's always when a client really likes you, right? At
yeah.
some point, they probably want to have the conversation of why don't you just come on board full time, right? And then you got to make a decision. Which,
yeah.
So I mean, it's not that you can't have a great fulfilling career as a full-time marketer. I mean, don't get...
No, no.
You know, I don't mean to... I don't want to paint it like so bleak, but I
right.
mean, it's just a different way of doing it, right? But I mean, yeah, if you've got a company you believe in and, you know, you are adding value and you feel you're contributing,
mm-hmm.
that is a fantastic career. I will never, never knock a full-time marketing role for someone, you know?
I wouldn't either. If it's working, I think it's great. Unfortunately, I think it used to be pretty normal that it would work pretty well.
Yeah,
you know, I think
I
for
agree.
Many, many years in my career, it worked out really well. I think we're at a point now... economically, and for whatever reason, maybe it's all the money staying at the top, the concentration of wealth,
mm-hmm.
whatever reason, that I guess inherently means it's not being passed around or shared or equity giving, I think that's leading to a lot of frustration in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
Some of our content that we get out and just put out and to see what people react to is workplace toxicity is through the roof.
Oh yeah.
It is through the roof, and I have a lot of sympathy for those who are doing that. And my original hope is that actually people can find a way inside of their company to make it work.
Absolutely.
Make that work if you can, but if you can't, the UFM is a door you can go through.
Right.
That you couldn't go through before.
Absolutely.
What are you looking forward to over the next couple of years now that you're into this? exciting new world. There's a tribe, there's a community of yeah. big marketers.
Well, I mean, I love learning new things, and I love like having, you know, great people to bounce ideas off of. Mm. So, and whether that's, you know, you get in with a great client, you can do it there, or just having, you know, again, kind of like-minded marketers to bounce ideas off of in a community, you know, like UFM is going to be developing here. Both of those things are incredibly awesome, right? Because that's what energizes me, right? And again, I love learning new things, right? So I'm always looking for a new challenge, a new opportunity. And, you know, when I engage with something, I want it to be something that is going to grow, or, you know, someone's being disrupted, they got to figure out a strategy to get through it. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of stuff that excites me. So yeah. That kind of, more of those opportunities are going to continue to evolve, and that gets me excited.
Yeah. Well, and you're coming at a lower price and a higher value, so your ability to deliver on that should increase exponentially.
Absolutely.
What about outside of work, family, career, non-career things?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. No, are you going to write a book? Are you? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've written enough articles now, and a friend, Ann Pryor, said, you know, you need to just take all these individual articles you've written and lay them out as chapters in the book, and then fill out the rest of it, because mm-hmm. you know, there's good stuff.
You're a good
there.
Writer.
I appreciate
I've
that.
Enjoyed it. Yeah,
I appreciate that. So yeah, I mean, that's always one of those things. I love to speak. I've done a lot of speaking engagements, so yeah. That, you know, could potentially get on the circuit there too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then yeah, love my family. I got two kids in high school, and
High school.
Yeah.
So we have actually a module for that in UFM if you have young kids in school.
Indeed.
Did you find that you went right there?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
It's a different deal, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, I mean, yeah. you know, at different stages of your life. I mean, like a lot of people, I've talked to a lot of people that go into consulting like after they retire, that's what their plan is. Mm-hmm. And it's sometimes like, well, okay, and that's fine, but you could do it now too if you wanted to. Mm-hmm. Right? Because yeah. fundamentally, there's, you know, if you've got some reason to wait, if there's a golden parachute, or, you know, sure. you're just the stability, or you want to get the kids through college, I totally get it, right?
Yep.
But
yep.
But you don't have to wait if you don't want to. If you're stuck in a toxic environment,
yeah.
if you're stuck and you feel like you're at a dead end, mm-hmm. Check out UFM. See what else is out there and the opportunities, yeah. because you may not have to stay.
Yeah, I think the pressures are so great. You're right. I mean, you want everybody to have a successful marketing career, including the owners.
Yeah.
I think the pressure on agencies and even internal departments is the market is putting such pressure on them. Mm-hmm. I didn't create this to, you know, this isn't an anti-agency thing.
It's right.
The market is putting so much pressure on agencies. When I sold my agency, you know, we were talking about how what we used to get for $60,000 is on its way to six.
Right.
And, you know, just the dynamic. So it's sort of like, well, the animal's bigger than any of us.
Sure.
You know, it's just bigger than any of us. The wave is bigger than any of us. You want everybody to do the best they can and right. survive through it. So.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, and I think there will always be a place for agencies, right? I think the ones that really specialize and can do something specific and can do yep. it better than anyone else, they're going to succeed, right? I think it's where it gets a little murky is the agency of record model, right?
That's what Ad Age talks about, is how yeah. that is really, really, you know, because you start asking it to do things that it's not really geared to do.
Right.
You know, again, I consider this sort of a redressing of services, and that is, you know, a lot of the people in our select network of suppliers,
mm-hmm.
for example, they're agencies and agency people,
mm-hmm.
and with a lot of great skills, and I think they're actually finding some relief,
mm-hmm.
because they used to have to go in and say, well, I am this particular skill,
right,
digital, design, whatever, but I'm being asked by the client to deliver more than that,
right.
and it's really not my sweet spot. So inside the UFM supplier network, it's like, I need a designer.
Yeah, totally.
You know? And I need a designer to understand UFM. They need to know where they fit in the customer journey.
Right.
But it's, so the need for those wonderful skills, whether it's media or design or anything, but it's totally going to reform. Again, it's reshaping.
Right.
But it's not like companies are going to stop marketing.
Right. No, no, of course not.
They still have to have sales.
Right.
You know, it just has to be in a different way. So it's really exciting to be part of it.
Yeah.
Well, we started the conversation on episodic marketing and the dangers of it. And I think we solved a little bit with talking about how fractional marketing is a thing. But mm-hmm. just to kind of come back here before we close up, and that is, do you have suggestions or ideas to offer a small business, a mid-sized business, on how to watch out for episodic marketing? What are the indicators that this is a threat to you and what you might do about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, like there was an article I wrote on LinkedIn a while back saying all marketing is sales. I mean, I think the thing you've got to remember, particularly if you're evaluating one tactic, is how does this fit into the overall, and will it ultimately drive the bottom line? you know, all marketing should drive sales either today or tomorrow. So you need to be influencing someone who would potentially purchase your product or service, or someone who will influence someone who will purchase your product or service, right? But particularly when you get into some upper funnel brand marketing, it can get really fuzzy and talk about building awareness and changing opinion. But if you can't track it to something, if you can't track it, I wouldn't spend the money, right?
So change the lens of shiny object and look through the lens of metrics and numbers and accountability.
Exactly.
And you'll be just fine.
And the more amorphous and kind of broadcast it is, the harder it is to track. It can be done, but I mean, you know, the other challenge is if you've got too much noise in the marketplace too, you can't figure out what exactly is causing what results, right? So yeah. The more precise and specific you can be, the better. But I would never, you know, I guess a couple things. One is it doesn't make any sense to go down a particular path or try a tactic if you can't measure it. The second thing is it should be at a specific place with a specific purpose in the overall kind of revenue funnel, right? So if it's about building awareness and you don't have a call to action to either continue the relationship with somebody or take them deeper into the process, that's not money well spent either. I mean, there's no reason not to. You don't want to ask for the sale if it's just an awareness play, but at the same time, you should give them a great opportunity to engage deeper and further with you and your brand and your product or service. If you're not doing that at the end of, you know, whatever your effort is, it's an opportunity lost.
And money spent.
And money spent.
Yeah. So we'll wrap it up here, but before we do, for those who are listening that might want to reach you, what is your email and your phone number? And web address, my friend.
Absolutely. Web address is Customers First Marketing, and it's 1ST, so Customers First Marketing, because if you don't put your customer first, somebody else will, and they will take that customer away from you. So, and email address is, you can just reach me at alex@customersfirstmarketing. That's probably the easiest way to go.
Yeah.
Phone number 734-730-7648.
And I will post that in the information attached to this link so
Perfect.
People can reach you. But again, congratulations on finishing the UFM. All of that coursework.
Thank
and
you, John.
I'm more than anxious and excited to be part of the community that you and I are part of.
Yeah.
And watching you thrive as you have and really, really do well. So this
Thanks,
has been
sir.
Great.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thanks for the time. Appreciate
All right.
it.
You bet. You bet. Thank you.
For more information on joining the Fractional Life, visit www.unifiedfunnelmetrics.com and be sure to subscribe to future podcasts.